I call the Agriculture Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order on February 15th, 2024. Welcome, members. Welcome back to committee. It's a pleasure to see everyone again. And we also have some new faces in this committee. So I just want to introduce our new CLA, Jared Margoli. And they have been doing great so far, taking on this role, and also our new DFL research staff, Kyle Swab. So pleasure to have him on board too, and welcome to the committee. There is a quorum present. And before I forget, we also have some new pages, Alec, Maddie, and Lydia. If you can stand up or wave. These are temporary pages, and so hopefully we'll see you come back to committee too as well. So the first business is the approval of minutes for March 21st. We have about four meeting minutes to approve. So Representative Purcell, have you reviewed the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I move their approval.
All right. For March 21st?
Sure, yes, March 21st.
All right, so Representative Purcell, move the minutes for approval for March 21st, 2023. All those in favor of, any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 21st, 2023 are approved. Representative Purcell, the next meeting minutes?
Madam Chair, I move to approve the minutes from March 23rd, 2023.
All right. Representative Purcell moves the approval of minutes from March 23rd, 2023. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 23rd, 2023 are approved. And next, Vice Chair Purcell.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes from March 28th, 2023.
All right, Vice Chair Purcell moves the approval of minutes for March 28, 2023. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails, so the minutes for March 28, 2023 are approved. And then finally, the last motion, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the minutes from March 30th, 2023.
Representative Purcell moves the minutes for approval for March 30th, 2023. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 30th, 2023 are approved. All right, members, for our first committee hearing, we'll just have like an overview or informational hearing regarding just updates from the funds that we invested last year. So first up to present is from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Commissioner Peterson and Deputy Commissioner Andrea Volvo. If you can please introduce yourself for the record, welcome back to the committee and proceed.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, Tom Peterson, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrea Volvo. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
So we appreciate the opportunity to update you on some of the things that we picked out that we passed last year. Some of you have heard this when we did our piece last year, and then just have some comments at the end on a couple of bigger things or issues. So we'll just jump right into that. I'd also just remind folks too, we also have our Assistant Commissioner Peter Chesed is here. Yeah, Peter's here. And Commissioner Chesed and Commissioner Bailey, and we also have our division directors for our main divisions here too as well. And if you ever have any questions or items or things that it's helpful for you to visit with them about, and I believe in having them here to have the discussions and be able to help us answer questions, to use your time wisely. So just a reminder of our mission at the Department of Agriculture. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but we always put it in as an important reminding us of everything we're doing. And then just reminding everybody of the total general fund investment. You know, you can see in 24-25, a lot of one-time dollars, went into the budget. And then looking at the 26-27. And that's one thing, you know, I think, Madam Chair, that you worked on is a hole that we have in our agri budget. As we look at that, and we can discuss that at a later date. So some of the bigger pieces that we had that are very important to the agency, and we really appreciate the work that the committee did last year to help us, you know, really comes down to serving Minnesotans and how the Minnesotans interact with us, whether it's one of our many licensing structures that we have within the department. And, you know, it is frustrating when people can't access those systems or they're older. I get those calls right away and they'll say, oh, this is so old or frustrating or it takes too much time. And so really appreciate the help in modernizing our systems. So we have quite a robust effort at the agency to do that. And again, to me, it comes down to service for the people that we have. So you can see here, well, this funding supports efforts to replace our old and outdated systems. And, you know, in moving to more modern technologies, the department has also begun transitioning to our core customer service functions by using Salesforce, which is a modern and widely used platform. We are also very important, able to access some of the funds from Minute. We applied for a grant, and we were successful in putting together funds because we had this plan. I feel like we were the first agency to have our dollars approved for that. So we'll continue to work on that, but very important as we look at that. Another thing that, you know, and you think about what I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking about, you know, our ag emergencies are top of mind. And so we've been dealing mostly, as you might know, with high path avian influenza. You know, we had the quite an outbreak in 2022, and then 2023 actually, you know, after having 100 plus cases, we only had 2 cases last spring, but then it hit pretty hard this fall, and we well over 30 into 40 cases, but a lot combined together. And so I just really thank the committee too for funding our agency so that we can respond. I think that we're in pretty good shape in our ag emergency account planning for this next year. You can see, like, this weather's wonderful, but, you know, I was saying I kind of panic when I get home and I see open water and swans this week, and you know the virus is still circulating, and so we're in a little lull right now. But, you know, when we get to mid-March or March, you know, it's not unlikely. We don't know what we're going to see. We could see one case. We could have 2 like last year, or we could have 100, you know, and so it's really important that we're prepared and able to respond, because it's not just the larger commercial. We call them backyard, but there are smaller farms and producers, and that can be very important to that. So we also have used those funds to work on and be prepared for African swine fever. Again, just knowing that it's on our shores in the Dominican Republic, and watching for that very closely, in Minnesota being a number 2 hog producing state. And then looking at, you know, I think something that's been, you know, a top priority for the agency and for the committee over the years has been how we support our meat and poultry processing. And so getting those grants out the door, $2.5 million has been really important. You can see the amount that we have there. And a really important thing, this opens this month too as well. So we were able to award $812,000 to 18 grantees. Now, really excited about our farm to school work. Really seeing, I tried to get out and tour a lot of schools this year that are using these grants. And, you know, I also see that, you know, it leading to a lot of organic food purchases, but just organic sales where we're connecting farmers to school districts where they hadn't thought to buy directly from a local source. And so I'm really excited about the dollars, again, that you provided our department and our agency. We've also been able to leverage federal funds the last few years to kind of boost this, and really excited to see those dollars going out the door. So you can see the requests. We had 1.8 million in requests from 91 applicants, awarding 935,000 to 48 schools. Really exciting. And then we do have some work to do there. We expanded it to early child care centers, and we may want to look at the definition on that and expanding that. that's something to committee to consider. You also helped us with dollars to have a farm-to-school coordinator, and to me, we have the best farm-to-school coordinator, Kate Siebold. She's actually on a farm-to-school roadshow right this last week where we brought schools out to where they could ask questions and learn how to do that more. And Kate used to also coordinate for the city of Minneapolis, which has a very robust program. So we're very proud of the work she does and appreciate the support that you gave us for that. Something I've always thought about for many years and the legislature did for the first time was award dollars for us to do grants for the farmers market and grants. And so it's a one-time grant program for infrastructure and working on that too. We will be asking for some technical changes to this program, and we can talk about that more if you have questions. Mr. Hugan is here who could address that, but I'm excited about this, but we would like to see a slight change. The LEAF program, you've heard a lot about that over the last few years, and you can see the dollars there, $300,000 to compensate farmers for growing crops. And this has been a great program. I don't know how many times I've been there. Really interesting to go there on the days when we're all invited and we have meetings and cut ribbons, but it's really interesting to go there on just a day when the farmers are delivering their food and see how important that program is to giving them a guaranteed source and kind of get them going. It gives them some time to develop their other markets, and really excited to see that. Urban agriculture, too, we had a big increase in that this last year, so our RFP just opened in late January. And so we'll be updating you on that as we, it'd be interesting to see now as we kind of made some, expanded the eligibility cost to include transportation and translation just to see the demand we get for that. So it's open till March 21st. And then the Good Food Access Program, again, I kind of call this like, for those of you that aren't familiar, forget this, it's kind of like a grocery store type cost share where we can help food markets and underserved areas by doing some cost share. Very important program, I think, as we look around the state and we're able to, that RFP is open right now up until May 31st, and a good program as well. And we, that was increased the maximum award now, 2 to 75. Deep winter greenhouses, again, too, is a pass-through at the University of Minnesota. There's Representative Tapke, there he is, all right. Really interesting, got a lot of press, I think, when it was released and everything. And so you're seeing a lot of deep winter greenhouses in my travels and everything. So definitely something to look at, and that's open right now. Again, I think a big, discussion for the for the committee is dairy farms in Minnesota. You may have seen we lost 100 dairy farms last year. That's not abnormal to other states, but it's a concern for me. It's one of the hardest things I open every month is our dairy farm report, and I've been opening those for 20 plus years, and it just keeps going down and down. Actually, increases this month because we have farms that dried off and come back on. But as we talk about what we can do for dairy farms in the state, the appreciate what you've done is put money out there. The issue we have is that the federal farm program, expired at the end of September of 2023, and they're in a one-year extension. And so we're looking at, they should announce the option, we think any time now, for a one-year sign-up. So we got to kind of look at that, but that money is sitting there, and we're glad to talk more about that as we go on. So I'll let you, I'll do this one real quick, and then we'll, I'll switch off. I was just gonna say international trade support, really excited about this. I was gonna let the Deputy Commissioner Vobble do this too, because she works really hard on the trade office, but I think the groups, and one of the things we really see as we look at our markets in the state is, how important trade is to our state, and you look at the commodities we have, and we're going both ways, but we've been able to catch up to some of our neighbors, North Dakota and Wisconsin, who have more staff and a more robust program. And we were able to snag somebody from Wisconsin, one of their top trade people, over to Minnesota. So but she's a great hire. And it's really going to allow us to really grow our trade program. We just got back from Morocco and highlighting the Port of Duluth. I'm actually going to join NASDA and the USDA next week in Cuba. And, you know, we have a lot of programs that we're looking at hosting here, and we'll be in, hopefully working with some of you to invite you to some of those when we're hosting delegations too as well. So just want to thank you for that, and we're excited about the possibilities with that.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. And just a shout out to Representative Ream for her support of that additional position for trade. And as someone originally from Wisconsin, I love bringing more and more of those folks over to Minnesota. So glad to have Lisa with us. So our agri-biofuels infrastructure grants, we got $6.75 million in 24-25 and then $3 million per year ongoing. You'll be familiar with this program. This committee will be. It helps retail service stations upgrade their infrastructure to increase the blends of ethanol that they can provide out in the marketplace. We had a lot of interest in this round, as we usually do. So for fiscal year 24, we received 54 proposals requesting $9.87 million. So we were able to award over $3 million to 16 different stations around the state. And coming soon, we do have our cooperative development grants, which are new this biennium that you all passed last year. That's at $200,000 per year. That RFP we expect to be out next week. We also have the new program, the meat processing hiring incentive grants. That is also new this biennium at $222,000, very specific, in fiscal year 24 and $322,000 in 25. That RFP will be out in later February or this month. Again, a shout out to our grant staff who had a lot of RFPs and new programs to develop and get out in a quick manner. So very appreciative of their work. Meat processing liaison, this was $75,000 per year ongoing. This also leverages the federal match of the same amount. This is to support a meat processing navigator position at the MDA to assist new and prospective meat processing plants to navigate the somewhat complex food safety regulatory environment we have and the requirements, the necessary requirements needed to get up and running. We hired Megan Jansa in early fall of 2023. She's been doing fabulous work and also someone we got from Wisconsin. Our down payment assistant grants program that started just last year, we got a $250,000 per year ongoing increase. So each round is at $1 million. And you'll recall these are grants up to $15,000 for folks who are looking to buy their or purchase their first amount of land and get into farming.
And I would say, Madam Chair, on that point, most of you are aware that we have a lawsuit on that program. And so we look forward to working with the committee as we look at that program and addressing it. It's a great program. We've been able to get 100 new people farms, but we'll be possibly looking at doing some changes to that and having a discussion with the committee on that.
And just to go over the results of that program so far, the round one was on a first-come, first-date, first-serve basis with applications exceeding the allocation that we had available in less than 10 minutes. So we had 32 awardees at $478.5 total. There is a legislative report available that should have been sent out to all of you. Of course, it's available on our website, or we can always send it out to you as well. That does a little bit more breakdown with data and demographics for the folks who did get awarded. For round two in fiscal year 24, there were some changes made last year to alter it to a lottery. So we replaced the first-come, first-served basis process with a random lottery with preference to emerging farmers. And then again, doubled the funding to $1 million. You also allowed us to carry over funding for more time to award, for awardees to close on their purchases, knowing that there's a lot of just timing issues to work out when you're trying to purchase land. And so far, we've awarded 32 grants at $480,000 so far. And then we do anticipate a round three opening in fiscal year 25, so late summer or early fall of this year. We're really excited about the expansion of our emerging farmers office, $1.2 million in fiscal year 24-25, and then $1.7 million in 26-27 and ongoing. You'll recall we had for a couple of years one staff person devoted to this office. We since then have hired her as our director, Lillian Otieno, and we'll get into that. There is a next slide with her picture on it, so we'll talk about her in a little bit. But the purpose of the funding is to expand the amount of staff who can offer these services, also grants available for beginning equipment and infrastructure grants, as well as technical assistance and translation services. So just so you can get some faces to a name, so Lillian Otieno was hired as our very first director in October of last year. She, for a long time, was our only staff person doing outreach and engagement. And then we did hire Emily Toner as our senior grant specialist in just last month. So she's developing and helping design, along with the Emerging Farmers Working Group, the new grant program that was passed last year. And then we are very, very close to hiring an engagement and outreach specialist as well. So we will have more to come on that once that's finalized. Our grain indemnity fund, $10 million in fiscal year 24. Of course, this is a one-time investment. You'll recall that this is to establish a grain indemnity fund that will protect producers who have unpaid grain sales when grain buyers or warehouses become financially insolvent. After the initial investment, the fund, you'll recall, will be replenished through fees associated either with the sales of grain or in lieu of current bonding costs. Forms and processes have been updated at this point so that claims can be made on the indemnity fund, but just to be clear, there have been no claims made on the fund at this time, so it is at full at the $10 million. We were also asked by the legislature to convene our grain advisory group, and we met a few times throughout the fall and did submit a report that was sent to you at the beginning of this month on the financial and bonding issues that we've been running into generally. So that report is also available. Happy to provide that to you if you can't find it in your email. And we have been begun scoping out what will be required to collect the funds should the indemnity drop below the $8 million, which is the threshold that was put into law. However, just want to again reiterate that no claims have been made. We will also have a few ideas about grain reporting and financials that will be coming your way for the committee to review as well. Funding for a pollinator research account, $800,000 in fiscal year 24 and $100,000 per year starting in fiscal year 26. Again, this is money that goes to the University of Minnesota, but it does require consultation with the MDA to fund research and outreach activities focused on improving pollinator habitat and pest management practices. That money has been, if you want to go to the next slide, actually, I think it's on there. Yes, it was transferred to the Board of Regents. They did issue a request for proposals in October of last year, and we were part of the review committee that was part of that process, did score those submitted projects in December of 2023. We were invited to the scoring meeting. We did not have an active role in selecting the projects, but we were certainly consulted and part of the process. Heritage Oilseed Research, this was $600,000 in fiscal year 24-25. These are appropriated to the MDA for a one-time grant to the University of Minnesota. Thanks to Representative Hansen, there he is. These are to evaluate, propagate, and maintain genetic diversity of oilseeds, grains, grasses, legumes, and other plants that were in commercial distribution and use in Minnesota before 1970. That has been transferred to the University of Minnesota. Our Soil Health Financial Assistance Program, previously this was a pilot program that you all put some money in, and then last year you made it a permanent program at $1.25 million in fiscal year 24-25 with $639,000 per year ongoing. I will also add that $3 million also came to us through clean water funds for this project as well, for this program. So this is, again, funding for to help folks with voluntary implementation of soil health management practices by awarding funds to access specialized equipment and machinery. Some of the popular equipment we are seeing are no-till drills and air seeders, strip-till machines, and various other cover crop seeding equipment. And you'll see there is a lot of interest in this program compared to the amount of dollars that we have awarded or have available. At the 2.3 that we had available to award, there was $8.4 million requested. So we know that there's a lot of interest, and we're excited for the next round. Continuous Living Cover Grants, $500,000 in fiscal year 24-25. This is for grants to organizations in Minnesota to develop enterprises, supply chains, and markets for continuous living crop cover crops and cropping systems, or CLC crops. You'll be familiar with a lot of the work that's happening at the Forever Green program with things like perennial forage, perennial grains, and winter annual cereal grains and oil seeds. So that RFP process that did close in October of 2023, and we were able to select 5 of the 15 projects and award $50,000 grants. PFAS and pesticides review report, we were awarded $250,000 in fiscal year 24-25. These were for the MDA to do a PFAS and pesticide review to determine which pesticides contain PFAS. You'll see the language there specifically. We did hire a temporary research scientist position to write the review report. We did submit an interim report to all of you at the beginning of the month. Again, happy to provide that. A final report is due to you all by the February of 2025, so we will be actively working on that for a final review to submit to you then. The fertilizer inspection fee increase. So during the 2023 legislative session, our statutes were amended to state that by commissioner's order, the commissioner must set the inspection fee at no less than 39 cents per ton and no more than 70 cents per ton, and that the commissioner must hold a public meeting before increasing the fee by more than 5 cents per ton. So as of January 1st, 2024, the inspection fee was increased by 5 cents per ton, so that the new inspection fee is at 44 cents per ton. At the same time, the Agricultural Chemical Response and Reimbursement Account, or ACRA as most folks know it, fee and fertilizer tonnage fee was reduced from 48 cents per ton to 32 cents per ton. So if you go to the next slide, you'll just see a comparison that between the inspection fee increase, the decrease in ACRA, and then the amount that folks pay for AFRAC, farmers are paying $1.16 per ton on their fertilizer, which is less than the $1.27 they were paying in 2023. Oh, yes, I should mention AFRAC. That's also a topic of conversation I'm sure we'll have with the committee. It is looking to sunset here, so we're looking to re-up that for another five or 10 years. And again, that will be a conversation here for the committee in the future.
And that just a couple other comments I just wanted to mention I think are interesting just for agriculture is that, you know, the Ag Census was released, this week. You may have seen stories about that, and I encourage the committee. We had an overview from Dan Loftus with the USDA today to, you know, consider maybe having him do an update. There's a lot of interesting data in there that we're looking at putting together. With Ag Reads afterwards, we also did a report on wild rice that you should have all received that we'd be glad to talk about at a later date as well. And then another big issue that the department's working on is the EPA petition and nitrates in 8 counties in southeast Minnesota, and we welcome the opportunity to talk about that as well. And finally, Madam Chair, I just want to say again, reiterate the thanks to our staff and to the committee for the a lot of the work that and bills that we passed last year, but it is a tremendous amount of work to install new grant programs, to work through them and try to do them in the best way possible. And I also just want to recognize one thing. I want to take this minute as commissioner to just remind the committee too that our department in the last year, since we adjourned the legislature, we've been standing up the Office of Cannabis Management, and that has taken considerable resources from the department. When I look at the time, not my resources as much, but Deputy Commissioner Bobble, Assistant Commissioner Chesset, and Michelle Medina, our legislative director, has taken considerable amount of our time. But we are slowly handing that off as they have a legislative director, an interim director, and a piece of it. That did take a considerable amount of work with our agency, too, as well. So glad to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner and Assistant Deputy Commissioner. Pleasure to have you back on the committee. And I just want to say thank you for all the work that you've done the past year, especially through all the work and the great relationships you established with farmers and partnerships and agencies, that the implementation of the grants has been pretty smooth. So thank you for that. Any questions from the committee? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And good to see you, Commissioner. I have two questions. One is on the grants that go to the University of Minnesota. Did you have any difficulty transferring money from your agency to the University of Minnesota?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, as far as I'm aware, no. We have quite a few grants that we send to their way, and they report back quite smoothly, but haven't had any issues that I'm aware of.
Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in my budget area, I had to drop in a bill today because there was apparently some difficulty in transferring money to the University of Minnesota. So I'm glad to hear that you were able to transfer money to the University of Minnesota, and I appreciate that. The other question, Madam Chair, is, a number of the provisions we have, whether it's for additional meat processing capacity or cover crops or any of those things, there's also federal money through the Inflation Reduction Act. And sometimes that's linked to there has to be a local match, but do we have any ideas? Is there money that's coming in directly to the Department of Agriculture that then you have the authority to spend? I think there's an infrastructure czar now. If you could just elaborate a little bit on the federal money, if there's a role for the legislature in that, in these equivalent program areas.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, and I forgot to, Deputy Commissioner gives me the notes and then I forget sometimes, but one of the big pieces we have is, and I'm gonna not get this right, but it's a RFSI grant, and we got and I think a lot of the work that we do in Minnesota, we got $12 million to help build our resiliency, resilient food infrastructure. And so one of the things that we're looking at is how do we kind of use some of our like value-added type grants but we can kind of boost those, and so we can kind of leverage and build out some of that. It's interesting on that grant is not for meat processing. And it's for, so we're really looking at dairy as one of those. No doubt, I already mentioned that, the dairy, it will be a priority in that. But other type of products could be aquaculture. We also have an aquaculture report we're working on, a lot of different things. So that's a good one that we can leverage and work on. Another one on meat processing where that one doesn't is we have a meat processing loan program. On that. Not that you'd all know it, but we got $15 million last year, thanks to the work of our legislative director, Michelle Medina, and some of our partners, and Meg Moynihan, that works for us. That's significant. We have a $15 million low-interest loan program that we can work out. And we just approved our first loan on that around the state fair time, and I've been able to look at the RFPs that are in place, and it's amazing. It's really good. It's what we need to do, build out some USDA plants, halal plants. These are all things that we've been working on for a long time, and now the state is able to support that. And then, you know, really looking too at our water certification program and other things, we have a lot of these climate smart commodity grant programs in the state, and so working on how do we leverage those dollars that are there right now too into having a win-win on a lot of our different programs we're working on. So whether it's climate, but water quality is a big issue, and so a lot of these should overlap. So there is a lot of federal dollars out there. We do our best to try to capture those and leverage those. And not to be super controversial, but another one that I would say we were able to capture dollars on is a good example is wolf conflict grants, and we're able to grab some money there. That was the late Representative John Poston who did that bill in the House, and we haven't had money in that in the past, but because we've had a program, we're able to go and grab some of those dollars. So we always look for those opportunities to leverage federal dollars. We have great staff, our marketing staff and others, that look for those opportunities and then see how we can build off of that.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I noticed with great excitement that the feral hog and mink report just dropped. So I've got nighttime reading.
Madam Chair, just this last week I was in at the Pork Expo in Mankato, and I met with the Manitoba pork producers. And, it is interesting to see, that we do have wild pigs in Manitoba, which we share a border with. And as you look at, they're, assuring us that they have a pretty robust program, and so I think it's an interesting issue we want to definitely keep out of there. So we're continuing to work with the DNR and the board on that. Thanks for helping us move that along.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, but first just kind of a positive thing, a feel-good thing, talking about the meat processing. There's a plant back in my area in Bruton, Genegus Meats, and they built a totally new building on the edge of town, and they can employ, I think, between 15 and 20 people now and process about 60 animals a week, and they're USDA inspected. So just a really good story about the expansion of our local processing. So thanks for the help. Now to my questions. Commissioner Vobel, thanks for your work on the agri-fuels thing. And the state has $3 million, and there's also a federal program. Do they marry together, or are they totally separate? How do you work with the federal dollars in that biofuels program?
Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. Yes, so there is a federal program. I think they lovingly call it the HBIP program. We've used federal or agri dollars to leverage federal funds in the past for that specific program. I think as of right now, it's somewhat separate. They kind of run it in a different sort of parallel path. But we've got service stations around the state that are always looking at those and applying for those grants. So it's certainly something that complements the work that we do at the state.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I've heard some of those federal applications can get really complicated, and if you can assist them with the application, that would be wonderful. I sat here thinking, you know, $10 million sitting in this indemnity fund, is that gaining interest, or is it what happens to the proceeds, not proceeds, but that's a lot of money sitting there, and interest rates are pretty attractive now. So what's the situation?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it is collecting interest. Correct. That is correct.
So the fund is really more than $10 million right now?
Yeah. Our finance person.
correct. And I can get you a more exact amount on that at a later date.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So is that the same with the dairy, that $4 million dairy?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe no. It's because we're in a separate ag fund pot for the grain indemnity. So I think that collects interest, but the dairy with an eye program does not.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. In your handout, talking about the down payment assistance grant, it almost seems like a play on words. You're looking to do a random lottery with preference to somebody. So do you pull somebody's name out and set that aside? How do you give preference in a random lottery drawing?
Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson. So I believe this is the way we do it, and I'll circle back with you if it's different. But from what I understand, we do pull random names from the pot. So folks, we have it open for a certain amount of time. People put in their application, and then we pull randomly. Then we go down the list. So we have a list, and then we go down and see if you meet that preferred qualification. If not, then you we go to the next person. And then if that money is not depleted by the time we hit the end of that list, then we go back, if that makes sense.
Representative Anderson.
And I assume then because of what's ahead, that money was depleted before you got back to that second group then? Is that correct?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, essentially.
Vice Chair Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for being here and for the updates along the interim and the continued work that you all have done. I have a couple of questions and maybe a couple of geographical questions on some of the reports that you've given us. And let me know if you are unable to share some of this information. So the farm-to-school increase and the... We had requests from 91 different schools, and 48 schools were awarded. Do you have a map to kind of show us where in the state those were? And I have that same question for the Soil Health Financial Assistance Program. And then for the Continuous Living Cover Grants, you said that you were able to select 5 of the 15 projects, and I'm wondering both geographic and if that's public, what those 5 entities are.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Purcell. So, yes, we create all sorts of maps with that very information. So if we don't have it in the report, we can get that for you very, very easily. On the 5 awardees, I believe that's public, and I think Margaret might be here, maybe not. Okay.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, Margaret, do you have that? We can get you a list, but there's 5. There's some that are, I know that there's one in Northfield. I'm pretty sure there's a couple in your district. Perennial Promise has one. Yep, and we try and do most maps just so folks can see the geographical diversity of where our grantees are, but we can get that for you.
Vice Chair Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then kind of an unrelated, I believe an unrelated question, but I didn't hear you talk about, I know there's been a lot of discussion around mental health and especially for farmers and rural folks, and so I'm wondering if you have any updates about I know the state provides programs, there might be federal programs, but if you could talk a little bit about
mental health for our farming, our agriculture community. Thank you.
Madam Chair and Representative Purcell, I'm trying to think, like, we didn't increase our base on any of those, so we appreciate the base that we have for our farm advocates. And again, I just remind all of you that we have the farm advocates at our department. We have, I think we have 9 actually at the moment scattered around the state. So if you ever have a farmer or somebody in your district that's having a hard time, they're free, they're confidential, they're very helpful. So right now, dairy farmers, hog farmers especially right now are losing money on hogs. And I just met with our farm advocates, the commissioners, we meet with them regularly to hear what's going on. And it's tough, but that's something our legislature's always invested in. And you just never know somebody's problem. But that there, we have good solid funding for that. We have the 2 mental health counselors, also a reminder if you have people. We've had good support from the legislature on those, and they're both steady. You know, I can tell you, I send people to them on a regular basis, you know, and Ted Matthews and Monica, they do a great job and are a great resource, you know, and then we also have the helplines. We added text lines for that, and then the other thing that we do for that is farm safety. I think a lot of accidents and things we see on the farm is we do quarterly farm safety meetings, something that I started when we worked with Representative Anderson actually for many years as we did our farm safety grants. We didn't have this in the slide, but we also have that too. But a lot of accidents we see on the farm are because people are stressed or working and doing things they shouldn't. And so, you know, we're in good shape financially, and I'm proud of the programs that the legislature has given the department to work on with those. So appreciate that. But also a reminder that they're there to be used.
Vice Chair Purcell. All right. Members, we still have 2 more presentations to go through, so if you can keep your questions and comments concise. Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So you discussed about the number of dairies being down by 100 dairies in the state. And, of course, concern in my area is clean water. So with those dairy cows, of course, goes the alfalfa that they eat and the filtration that does for our environment. So first of all, can you tell me, is there information that could show me where those farms are located? And second of all, have those cows been eaten up, so to speak, by other farms, or have they left the state and left our economy entirely? Do you have that information, or could you get it to me?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Jacobs, yes, we do have that information. If you're interested, too, we do a report once a month, and I could share that through the committee. And if you're interested, you can sign up for that, so you can see every month how many farms we added or lost. And then we keep track by county. So I can share with you a database or a spreadsheet that would say how many dairy farms we have in Winona County, for example. And so we can track that. We track it by month. And so we can see which counties are losing or gaining dairy farms. So I just was in central Minnesota looking at, and I see like Morrison and Todd County kind of flipped, or we've seen, you know, losing a few farms there too as well. Keep in mind, when dairy farms go out of business, they don't necessarily exit farming. They're just exiting dairy farming in a lot of cases. So they might go into raising cattle or cash crops, something else, and so we try to encourage that as much as we can, you know, and everything. So, but we can, I can help get that data to you too as well, or so that you can see it.
Representative Jacob?
Yeah, well, and specifically, the overall number of dairy animals has that left the state, or has it just transferred to another?
No, Madam Chair and Representative Jacob, no. And that's what's interesting when we look at the even since I've been commissioner, and again, you know, I look at Minnesota, and I do take it personally because I want to see a thriving dairy industry, and to me that means farmers, but I look at that we've lost half of our dairy farms, you know, and that there's a lot to that and everything, but we haven't lost any cows, you know, so we have 400, between 430 and 460,000 dairy cows, and we've been that way for many, many years. The cows are still there. It's just the farms that we've lost.
One last comment. So that just proves the importance of the necessity for these farms to be able to expand their size. Either those cows are going to move to a dairy that's larger, or they're going to have to leave our economy and leave our state. And with it goes the alfalfa and water filtering capability on our environment.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I'll be real quick. First off, for some context, Representative Hansen brought up the feral hog situation, and I know in the last month I've had two calls from Kitson County, just to make the committee aware, feral hog sightings in Kitson County, so it's happening. We're right there in the thick of it. Also in Kitson County, and this is where my question for Commissioner Peterson would be, can you comment a little bit, just for clarity for the committee's knowledge, where we're at with the elk depredation and the wolf depredation dollars as things have progressed the last year, especially in the context of any changes to the elk management plan going forward?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Burkle, we do have concerns about that account or those accounts, and as you know, we do pay depredation, for those of you who forgot, or crop damages for elk, and we have seen higher accounts of both in the wolf account and the elk account. And so a lot of times we can kind of move the money back and forth, and this year we are, kind of concerned that we're going to have more demand than we have, and then we create a waiting list in that case and see if the legislature backfills it or we get the money next year, and then we try to catch up and see. But we have seen an increase, and there is a legislative report on both of those too as well.
Representative Burkle. All right, seeing no further questions, I'll welcome the next presenter. We have AURI. I see Director Shannon and Director Dan Sparks, if you can proceed to the committee, and if you can state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee, and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Sparks. I'm the Director of Government and Industry Relations with the Ag Utilization Research Institute. It's our honor to be here this afternoon to present and give you an update at our activities regarding AURI. I see many members, Madam Chair, and committee members that I have had the opportunity to meet and work with in the past. And for those of you that I have not had an opportunity to do so, I look forward to doing that during this legislative session. And so with that, Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, if we're set to go, I would like to turn it over to our Executive Director, Shannon Schleck, to walk you through our presentation this afternoon.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Shannon Schleck. I'm the Executive Director of the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. So it's great to be here today to share a little bit about our fiscal year 23 activities and output and impact that we're having on the state of Minnesota. I'll start out just a little bit of background about the organization, just for those that are not fully aware of what our role is and what we do. Our mission is really to accelerate the expansion of market opportunities for agricultural producers and agricultural dry products. So that's everything from production agricultural to thinking about the byproducts and co-products coming off of our value-added processing industry that we have here within the state. And our vision that our board just approved is to really be a catalyst for this economic activity and to help drive $500 million in economic impact for Minnesota by 2026. So we have that destination that we're really trying to move the needle on creating new opportunities and new value-added products and new markets for Minnesota agriculture. Based on statute within the organization, right, we have a prescribed board of directors. Today we have a board of 11 individuals. You can see them listed here. We have three farmers representing research and promotion councils. Today that is Minnesota Soybean, Minnesota Wheat, Minnesota Beef Council. And then we have the two general farm organizations being Farm Bureau and Farmers Union, two agribusiness reps, one representing bioindustrials, one representing food on our board of directors, two at-large, which today is one food company and one gentleman that's been active in the agricultural space as well as the investment capital area. And then our two legislative directors, Chair Vang and Chair Putnam from the Senate. And then we just recently elected in January two new directors to our organization. Ted Winter will be representing Minnesota Farmers Union, and Michaela Tabert will be representing Minnesota Wheat Research and Promotion Council. So ARI is today about 35 people scattered around the state of Minnesota. We have four physical locations where we conduct our work, and we have our laboratories. Our administrative office is in Crookston, and we're also part of the Ag Innovation Campus with Minnesota Soybean up in Crookston, and looking at that as our future home, right, as an organization with laboratory space and working with them on innovation space as well. We have our Marshall location at Southwest Minnesota State University. There we have five different laboratories that our scientists are active in, one being a biofuels lab, a meat laboratory, a food laboratory, an analytical laboratory, as well as a product evaluation center as well. And then in Waseca, we have our pilot laboratory, which is really focused on biomass processing. And we are just in the throes of moving there. We've been at the same location for many years. We outgrew that location, and we will be moving to a new bioindustrial innovation center currently as we speak, which will roughly double our capacity with the one-time funding that we were provided from the state last year. And then we have a small office at the University of Minnesota St. Paul, as well as in their food science department, where we're collaborating with the faculty there. From a program standpoint, we have three main categories that we try to drive new opportunities around. These are commercialization services, which is one-on-one technical assistance, business development assistance with Minnesota companies, and helping them turn their ideas into reality to get that into the commercial marketplace. That's probably about 40% of our time as an organization. We have our public research initiatives, which are public-facing applied research opportunities of looking at how do we de-risk new opportunities, what education or what gaps are out there that we can help fill to help businesses make decisions and move ideas forward. And then we have our ARI Connects platform, which is really around creating opportunities to connect, getting information out, being our platform for connecting and for sharing information with different members of the ecosystem. And through those three programs, we stay pretty busy every year in terms of the activities. So you can see here in terms of some of the outputs that we had. We onboarded 87 new projects. We closed 115. We worked on over 220 projects, right? So several of our projects are maybe, you know, short term, but then several are multi-year projects as well, as we're working to move these ideas forward and look at different phases of that work. And then you can see how they're broken out here as well across our food area and our bioindustrial area, which are our two main categories that we work in. And then what's interesting, a lot of the bigger projects, of course, cover both areas, right? As we look at different opportunities or what is the best use for a different byproduct or a different agricultural product, and that ends up spanning across our food team and our bioindustrial teams. Just a little bit of a deep dive on food. We've seen a lot of growth in the food area over the last several years. This is a graph at the bottom from 2015 that shows the number of cottage food licenses in the state that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture maintains. You can just see that tremendous growth. And they are reaching out to our food team for assistance in terms of their product, shelf life, nutrition facts panels, things that they need to have those products on the shelf. So we've added a fair amount of food expertise to our staff over the last several years. To help keep up with the demand and help move these ideas forward. We've also done a lot more in the meat area, right, as we've seen the local and regional meat processing opportunities and some of our collaboration with USDA and the Agricultural Marketing Service as well over the last couple of years. So we've done new projects on not just one-on-one assistance, but also doing initiatives to look at, you know, what are some of the gaps in financing? Can we do something around benchmarking to help them with their business models? Looking at different resource maps and what's out there that's available to make that easily accessible to them. So we actually have three people that work on meat projects and are dedicated to that area for us currently. So it is an area that we've really ramped up as well. And then we have our traditional work on just, as I mentioned, shelf life, nutrition facts panels, product evaluation, helping them scale up, moving from volumetric to weight measurements as they continue to grow their businesses. And just helping out with regulatory elements as well, and then looking at new opportunities for them. Here are just a few examples of companies we've worked with. Hoyo, which does a sambusa, right? And they've grown their business and scale. They are doing retail, but as well as have gotten into the school lunch program. Same thing for Cannonbells. And then we've done some initiatives of looking at commercial kitchens and right-sized manufacturing. We find that as food entrepreneurs scale, they sometimes can't find the right assets here in terms of growing their business to that next level, and you know, might have to leave the state to find the right co-manufacturing. And how do we look at some of those gaps and keep that activity here, right, as they continue to grow their businesses? On the bioindustrial side, it's really for us looking around feed, fuel, and fertilizer applications, and thinking about what are those valuable next steps or next uses. A lot of that usually revolves around dewatering and drying and making right that product easier for transport. Right as we look at the different water, right, how do we remove it in an economical fashion? What's the nutrient composition of those products in terms of could it be used for feed? Is it best used into fertilizer? Right, and then we also just look at process development and process improvements through engineering services, where we can help them assess what capital equipment they need to purchase. And what that looks like in terms of right-sizing that for them. We've done quite a bit of work in the hemp space over the last several years, right, and we've gotten pretty active in the anaerobic digestion space as well as part of our bioindustrial efforts. Just a few examples here. Asmus Farms, or Ag Innovations LLC, they are down by Winthrop area. We helped them with installing a new pelleting system for their poultry litter. That helped them to expand their market opportunities, and they're now into retail and different retail classifications as well, into like nurseries and ornamental horticulture, so a higher value added opportunity for them. We helped Fond du Lac with their composting project in terms of looking at food waste, fish waste, and how could they make a circular approach in terms of putting nutrients back into the ground for agricultural production. We've done quite a bit of work with Minnesota Soybean on looking at soy meal uses. As we look at the increase in oilseed processing in the area, what are some other demand opportunities for soy meal? Right, as we look at the demand for oil and renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel, we also have a byproduct in soy meal that we're looking at different options. And for example, ornamental horticulture lawns, different higher value opportunities there as well. And then we had a really interesting project through LCCMR funding on hemp erosion control with the Department of Agriculture in MnDOT. Of looking at how can we replace plastic in erosion control blankets and also into hydromulching as you look at road opportunities, and how does hemp potentially fit into that as a new use and help drive market opportunities for creating more hemp production here within the state of Minnesota. Our Connects platform, just briefly, we do thought leader discussions around specific areas that we want to learn more about and tap into industry around different opportunity areas. This year we did one on sustainable aviation fuel, another one on green fertilizers. Fields of innovation is really looking at new crops and new traits and what are the market opportunities. Webinar Wednesday is across the board on different topics. Our renewable energy roundtable, we had a record enrollment for this last one on anaerobic digestion that was held in 2023, and again had a really good turnout in 2023 December here as well on hydrogen. And then we do our new uses form every year as well, which is to showcase capital investment opportunities, where our investors are looking, as well as what are innovations. Briefly on one-time funding that we received last year, we put that money to use very quickly in terms of updating equipment that we needed at our facilities. We've added small-scale fermentation to work with different companies on you know, looking at different feedstocks that could go into ethanol to creating alcohol for right, whiskeys or other consumptions as well. We've added mass spectrometry to add additional services in terms of vitamins and other nutrients and things that we're being asked about. And then elemental analyzers, looking at nitrogen, right, phosphorus, potassium into different bio-based fertilizers. Just a wide range of things that we've been able to upgrade and update, as well as in the move to our Waseca site, which will officially launch on April 8th, and you'll be receiving an invitation for that open house as well as we move that forward. So we've close to about $1 million of the $1.8 million that we've been able to put into use already in terms of upgrading our capabilities and services. Just as we look forward for ARI, we're looking a lot at biomass processing with the new site in Waseca and the new capabilities we have. Fermentation continues to be an area that we receive a lot of interest around in terms of, not just our traditional thoughts of ethanol, but also in terms of, right, higher value molecules and different feedstocks and different microbiology bacteria strains that we can look at converting new value-added products. This nutrient recovery space is we're getting a lot of interest there as well. The work with U of M on green ammonia and green urea, I think, is also a key area of interest. Our slate is full with renewable natural gas and anaerobic digestion projects as we look forward into 2024. So lots of interest there that continues. And then we've been working a lot on just looking at protein, traditional and alternative, in terms of what are new opportunities, innovations around more sustainable protein opportunities as we look at just the importance of livestock, right, as well as the efforts around alternative proteins within the state of Minnesota and how do we continue to move that forward through collaborative approaches. And then our right-sized food manufacturing that I already mentioned. And then I'll just add, right, that our group is very focused on outputs overall. So from an impact standpoint, very proud of the work that we've done over the last several years. As we look at what clients have reported back to us in terms of the impact that we provided to them from our work with them, you can see here roughly $261 million in new annual sales that we've helped them generate and unlock in terms of new products and market expansion. $147 million in new capital that they've invested that we helped them de-risk in terms of making those investments into Minnesota businesses. And then 450 jobs that we've helped create and retain. And then you can see their forward-looking estimates as well in terms of 930 jobs and roughly $363 million in new capital that they look to invest. And with that, Madam Chair, I just thank you and thank the committee for your support of ARI and allowing us to have this impact with small businesses and entrepreneurs and innovators across the state to help them move their ideas forward and create new market opportunities for the agricultural economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Executive Director, and thank you to you and your team for all the work that you've done within ARI. I definitely do see your organization as the center of helping develop innovating and exciting agriculture products. So thank you so much for all your work and your teams and your staff support on this. Now for a discussion, any questions from members? Vice Chair Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you go back just one slide to the map? It's hard for me to see both on this screen and so small in black and white. I think you have these divided up into districts. Are these the Senate districts or the House districts? And if you could send this larger, more available to read, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Executive Director.
Very good, Madam Chair. Representative Purcell will gladly send that across. And we do have this in the legislative library as well. It has been posted our legislative report that has the map included as well. But we'll send it across additionally.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Good to see you, gentlemen. Question on anaerobic digestion. It seems like what we have working so far, you have to have the economy of scale, a big operation, dairy type thing. Are you doing any work on trying to downsize that so it would work for a smaller livestock operation? Or what do you see down the road as far as how big do you have to be to make anaerobic digestion profitable?
Executive Director?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, that's a great question, right, in terms of what is the right size. And I don't know, I don't have the answer at this point. I know what we have been doing is looking at co-digestion opportunities, right, in terms of livestock as well as a food waste contribution or different, right, other opportunities for several farms to participate, but that creates other, constraints. All right, as you think about moving that around and just the education that's needed from that space. So we are, and the technology does continue to improve, I would say, as we look at this. But I think this co-digestion space, looking at, what other feedstocks are available, that can make it economical at farm, for others to participate is, I think, an area that we focused on and that we're doing work on looking at all these different feedstocks, looking at the biomethane potential of that at a laboratory scale, and then looking at increasing that to a pilot size in terms of just like what are the economics to make that viable? Because agree that today it's probably a couple thousand head, that you need to make it viable.
Representative Anderson. Representative Sensenmayer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My question is around with the biomass processing. Are you all doing anything around the processing of emerald ash borer and the wood from emerald ash borer? I know that that's a huge issue coming up and that's affecting where I live, but is soon to affect kind of the whole state. So would love to hear if your office is doing any work on that. Thank you.
Executive Director.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Sensenmayer, we do not do a lot of work in the forestry space as an organization. We've spent more time on agricultural biomass, and the Natural Resources Research Institute has done a lot more work on the forestry side. So we've done some work around bedding with shavings, wood shavings, and looking at that, and then done some cooperative work right on forestry where we have expertise to bring around biomass densification. Where we incorporate wood into it, but we haven't done anything specific around emerald ash borer.
Representative Sensenmayer. Any further questions? All right, seeing none, thank you so much for being here.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right, next members, we have our final presentation for today. It's from AGREET, Agricultural Research, Education, Extension, and Technology Transfer. So I'd like to invite Dean Dr. Brian Burr to the table, and if you can state your name for the record, and welcome back to committee. And also, I believe we have do we have Dr. Mitch Hunter as well? If you can also proceed as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Vang. Apologies for this delay. Appreciate the opportunity to present today regarding AGREET. For those of you who have not heard of AGREET before, it's an acronym that stands for Agricultural Research, Education, Extension, and Technology Transfer. So a rather long name to that project. Just to give you this legislation was passed in 2015, so we've been about 10 years in process with AGREET. It's focused primarily on sustaining the long-term productivity of agriculture in Minnesota. Focused on crops, livestock, very broadly, new product development, all of those areas that advance our agricultural research capabilities, and was focused largely on elements of this in the legislation. It says human capital or human infrastructure, and that was basically the idea that we needed to have investments in the faculty, the extension educators that deliver the programming and research that comes into many of the new products and innovations that come out through the University of Minnesota as part of our research programs. It is a partnership at the bottom of this. You'll see I'm with the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, or the college. It also includes the College of Veterinary Medicine on the animal side of it, and includes the extensions as part of the education programs to Greater Minnesota, Twin Cities, and beyond. So it's a partnership that works across those to deliver these areas. As we visit about this, one of the key elements was as we work with agriculture was to be broadly applicable across agriculture. So rather than thinking about it typically as swine or dairy or beef, we looked at what are these larger areas we're trying to create contributions to and solve challenges in regarding this. And so when you look at this, you'll see, for example, when Mitch talks about Forever Green Initiative, new crop development is a key part of this. Certainly looking at water quality, the environmental issues of that, precision agriculture, nutrient management, as we were discussing about nitrogen and crop systems earlier today, how do we manage those effectively? So really looking, as you look at those pillars across the broad scope of that applies, and we call it doing the most good for the most people in Minnesota we could. It didn't get narrowed into very specific areas. We're addressing these bigger commonalities that really cut across our challenges, whether it's climate change or environment or water availability, water quality, soil health, so on. We're trying to address broadly those impacts on agriculture and food systems. The investments that we have in GREET are really, again, focused on human infrastructure. There are a few other components to that that are part of GREET as well. The Rapid Response Funds, there's other legislation on rapid response funds in Minnesota. Those are targeted. You were talking about feral pigs earlier, for example. Concerns there being swine flu, African swine flu. We have the capabilities then to take resources, move those in very quickly into circumstances where we might say, how do we test? How do we identify? How do we assure that that isn't spreading across Minnesota? Those are the kind of things we do through rapid response funds. They were very effective during avian influenza as that came into Minnesota, of us addressing ways to both with growers work on how do you contain, do biocontrols, biosecurity, and innovations in protecting flocks from the infections of those. So those tend to be very quick, very rapid, and those funds provide that capacity for us to immediately get people working on that when it's needed as part of that. The avian influenza research, there is a base of that as well. As this legislation was passed, we were in the midst of the first significant outbreak of avian influenza, and that work continues in how do we develop vaccines. So the broader long-term research, it's not simply responding to it, but actually doing that longer term. And then this last session, there were some additions to AGREET, and that included funding for Forever Green Initiative that Mitch will talk about shortly. The Deep Winter Greenhouse Program that was mentioned earlier as well, that's underway and in progress to be implemented. And then we also had a Minnesota tribal representative that was added to legislation on the right-hand side of this. You'll see that we, as well as ARI was just discussing, we have an advisory group that works with this. That's about 14 members across the industries in Minnesota. It does include forestry as well as agricultural products. It includes people from sustainable agriculture. It includes people from environmental organizations. So a pretty broad representation of that challenges we're trying to address. And we realized, of course, one voice we were missing, and this was tribal nations that we work with quite a lot, in both lakes and rivers wild rice, as well as cultivated wild rice work that was part of AGREET as well. So those are our advisory groups that help to support that. Just to give you some sense of the scope and impact this has had, we have in CFANS roughly 230 faculty across CFANS working across a broad array of areas, all the way from soils and water, all the way up to forest resources and fisheries, wildlife, conservation, biology, and everything in between, food science, nutrition, across that. So this represents a little bit more than 12 to 15% of our faculty that we've been able to hire as a result of AGREET, that human infrastructure piece. And it cuts across all of those fields in being able to bring that together. And what that does is it leverages in those faculty that are there oftentimes into the research programs that we're doing, helps us to build that capacity, and really facilitates our moving forward on these bigger questions going on. So really been, and they truly have been field-shaping people in this that I'll talk about in a moment. To give you some perspective of where they reside, there are about 27 faculty in CFAN. Seven of those are extension specialists that work on taking that research, as is our mission as a land-grant university, from the research component to teaching students, as well as taking that out into communities, businesses across Minnesota, so they can implement those innovations into those practices, quite similar to ARI's roles. College of Veterinary Medicine has 5 faculty in that, focused primarily around avian influenza, for example. There's one that's working on CWD and deer herds, has been very active and well-supported through funding as well from the legislature. And then there are 9 extension educators that are working on areas in community that work with extension to do that work. So a tremendous group of people doing that. Impact, we'll talk a little bit about some of the research projects they're doing, but in the meantime, I always look at it as return on investment. And with these faculty, so far since 2015, the state has invested about $17 million. Those were the recurring funds of $4.8 million per year through that period, every year coming through. That's that total amount of funding. That's resulted in over $56 million in grants and contracts. And those grants and contracts, some of them are within state of Minnesota funding sources, whether it's MDA or DNR or other partners we work with, MPCA, for example. But largely it's from large federal national level grant organizations and contracts. So we've had several grants that exceed over $5 to $10 million in this, one of those being the Minnesota Climate Adaptation Center, that's really driving not just the work that faculty are doing, but then drawing on additional funds that supplement that and provide the support to do the research and programs we do. And this group has been very aggressive and excellent at attracting those funds, because what allowed us to do is hire people into those areas that are of current concern. So when we see the Department of Defense, Department of Energy, United States Department of Agriculture, you look at natural resources, as they're putting out RFPs and requests for proposals, we're positioned to be able to advance those, bring those into Minnesota, and do the work that we see needed to address some of our biggest challenges. This is some sense right now. It's kind of interesting that we're going through this, and I call this the peak of greed phase. So there was the appropriations were $4.8 million a year. That small thumbnail on the bottom left-hand side is basically that image of the faculty that we have hired. And one of our realities is we have fixed funding bases, of course, as wages increase and salaries increase over time by natural attrition. We see that across the university, and this is why a Greek came into being, was people were seeing the reductions in the numbers of faculty that were working in these areas, because as we have reductions in funding or that base funding, we start to not replace positions, for example. And so as we've hit this peak of Greek, we essentially have all of our positions filled, so we did that quite quickly over a couple of years with the time agreement and funding in place. But we've reached that point now where that funding is fully deployed into faculty doing the work they're asked to do. As we go forward, the challenge will inevitably be with that fixed amount of funding that as positions people leave, whether they retire, hopefully they stay around, these are really productive faculty, but as people leave the university, it'll be challenging to refill those because they'll be coming in at higher salaries in cases for that fixed amount. So right now, which is a good part, so with the University of Minnesota, of course, we are now funding these positions, a good number of positions with shares of funding from the University of Minnesota. So it's leveraging those resources into the university. We are providing that. We will not, with tenure and the work that faculty do, we will not be removing faculty from this. We will continue to fund them in these areas. But eventually, of course, that reaches its end point as well. So we're excited by the work we're doing. It's tremendous work. We're hoping to see that going forward as well. Just some of the challenges that we're addressing with these. They are really the grand challenges. So you see this, and as I said, it's really around the circumstances, the broad environmental and other circumstances that support agricultural productivity in Minnesota. So we're working quite frequently. We're just talking about methane digesters, greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota's livestock sector is a huge part of that with the work we're doing. We certainly look at that with fertilizers as well. So the Green Ammonia Project is part of this with faculty members working in that from this. We're looking at herbicide-resistant weeds. So we're looking at, for example, Palmer amaranth coming to Minnesota. We have partners working within funding for the Minnesota Invasive Terrestrial Plants and Pest Center that works on issues of those terrestrial pests. We have faculty that were hired through Agreed that are part of that research continuing there, developing those weed management strategies. We work across in extension areas. We have an extension educator working with vegetable farmers around the Twin Cities. Earlier, the Good Acre was mentioned as a site where there's collection and marketing of food products from those people, from people doing small urban agriculture. We're also working to educate and provide focus on food safety, food processing, food distribution for those as well. So you can see this is very broadly impacting Minnesota's agriculture systems. Just another example, and this is both the grant and others, we hear a lot about AI. We received over $10 million grant from National Science Foundation on an artificial intelligence in agriculture systems. The University of Minnesota has the 15th or so largest supercomputing center in the country. We're leveraging that to do the work on how do we address issues of, for example, climate change and the interaction with soil, crop productivity, water, and mapping that across the landscape so you can understand where those actions are. So we've really been positioned well with this group to work on those types of issues. Animal health is a key issue I mentioned earlier. I won't go through these, but you can see the work across poultry. PERS has been a really pernicious and long-term problem in swine production. So working in those areas with CVM and the hires that were, College of Veterinary Medicine, the hires that were done there. Biosecurity, quality assurance education for swine producers is part of that work. And then really, again, reducing ventilation emissions from that as well, which is both greenhouse gas as well as those operations. So again, a very broad cross-section of work happening there. A huge area that's been really important for us, that's had both investments from elsewhere as well, is we have significant efforts in climate adaptation. We now house the Minnesota Climate Adaptation Science Center. That was a partnership with the Department of Interior. We're one of the few areas selected. That's a multi-state project. That work cuts across all crop systems, all livestock systems, as we see heat, water issues, we see soil fertility issues related to that. We are now that center that's driving that work. And Heidi Roop is an Agreed faculty member who was hired. She has an extension and a research appointment with the University of Minnesota. Driving that work, we're becoming the epicenter for how do we adapt Minnesota's agriculture to changes that are occurring in those environments. And so again, not just using this money to do our work, but leveraging that into broader impacts across the state. Another example of that, this is our last batch of hires in this. from the funding that's there. We'll continue, of course, if people were to leave, to hire as we can. But one of the big issues, too, several years ago, this was quite a while ago, the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center moved to Kansas State University. We had been trying to return that back to Minnesota, where it should be, as a leading dairy state. And as part of a grant, we hired Dr. Amanchala, who's now the director of the Midwest Dairy Foods Research Center, and that's come back to Minnesota now. So that is a national-level program. Well, it's Midwest-driven. It's driven by the International Dairy Foods Group, so it connects across the country in developing that. And again, of course, with our growing dairy industry, and it's really about creating new products, new demand, new uses for dairy products that supports our dairy producers and farmers. So those are some of the highlights of the impact. But one of our greatest highlights in this last year, there was funding included from the legislature to support the Forever Green Initiative. Mitch will discuss that, but this is a project. Sorry about that. I missed the key there one time. But this is part of a grant now. $2,000 was appropriated to support the Forever Green Initiative to build continuous living cover on the landscape, develop new crops, new uses for those crops. I'll turn it over to Mitch to talk about that.
Thank you, Brian. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the time today. My name is Mitch Hunter, and I'm the Associate Director of the Forever Green Initiative. I won't do the intro again or the overview because I think you know us well, and Brian just touched on it, but I did want to note that we are new to this agreed appropriation as of this past agriculture bill. It provided $802,000 per year with tails. And what this provides for us is long-term stability for six key positions. These are not new people that we hired. These are key people who are in place but who were soft funded. And so that means if a grant runs out and they aren't fortunate to get another one, that their work ends and the progress that they've been driving forward ends. So I'd just like to tell you a little bit about those six folks, which includes myself. And before I do, I want to note that we got the funds into our system as of December 1st. We did apply some of them retroactively per our contract with MDA, but it's been a very short performance period as far as the work that these funds have supported. So just keep that in mind as you think about the achievements that I'll highlight. First, I'll mention Dr. Praveen Bajgain. He is a breeder for Kernza perennial grain, and he is also expanding his program to deal with additional perennial cereal crops, such as perennial cereal rye, perennial wheat, and potentially perennial oat. And so Dr. Bajgain, in the last few months, has continued to lead his breeding programs on those crops. He's acquired additional funding to support that work. So I think this is a theme you'll see. Even though we have this additional funding from the legislature, our folks are not resting on their laurels and getting complacent with the funding they have. They're still going out there and actively trying to raise additional funds to grow the program, to grow the impact that they can have for the state of Minnesota, which is the goal of the base funding originally. So in addition, scientific work, presentations, publications, as well as mentorship of an undergraduate working in his lab. Next, I'll mention Dr. Julia Zhang. She is our pennycress breeder, and so she's working to develop domesticated pennycress as a novel oilseed cover crop. And again, in the last few months, keeping her breeding program going, which is quite extensive, lots of activity there. She's worked on and submitted four grants and has already gotten two of them funded, as well as presenting research, training her team, recruiting to grow her team, and serving in a leadership role similar to other AGRIT-funded faculty, this time for a large federal grant aimed at developing pennycress as a crop. Stephen Mulkey is our pea breeder, and he is developing both winter hardy and spring pea for Minnesota conditions. Of course, the winter hardy side of that is the real challenge because of our generally harsh winters until this year. And the real two big drivers of interest in pea, one is for plant-based protein. We have the Purist company in the state, leading national processor of pea protein and continued growth in demand for plant-based proteins, as well as the nitrogen fixation that comes from the growth of legumes. So this could be a great rotational crop option for a lot of our farmers. Dr. Mulkey is continuing to oversee his field trials. He's got over 500 winter pea breeding lines all across the breeding cycle, is doing many additional new crosses, and he also received two grants in this time period, one that will help him understand the mechanisms that lead to variation in protein content and quality, which will basically allow him to go after higher protein content, higher protein quality to make a better product for farmers, as well as optimizing establishment of the crop and developing high-throughput phenotyping, which will then feed back and allow him to accelerate his program. The last breeder I'll highlight is Lois Braun. So Lois has been with us for 22 years. Really one of the most hardworking and dedicated researchers I've ever met. And for all of those 22 years, she has been soft-funded, going grant to grant, and they've been able to string it together. But with this base support from AGREET, she's got a lot more stability. She can focus her time and efforts on expanding the program, expanding the impact, and not just, you know, maintaining a baseline of funding. So, of course, she's been continuing to do her work overseeing her research trials, her breeding, evaluating nut data from last season. So she gets to work with delicious hazelnuts. You know, it's a very different than a grain or an oilseed. Also applying for grants, publishing articles, and working on a conference, a hazelnut development conference that brings together producers from across the region as well as folks on the private sector side who are working on developing an industry around hazelnuts. Next, I'll mention my colleague, Colin Curitan. He's our Director of Commercialization, Adoption, and Scaling. He's been with Forever Green for 5 years, and he's got a pretty broad role, very strategic thinker and great asset for us. His direct role is to work on farmer adoption, so supporting farmers to take on our crops, and also working with the market to engage private businesses so that they can develop demand for these crops. And among many other things that I couldn't list, he's been managing his team of about 4 people. He has been overseeing what we call the ECO program. That stands for Environmental and Economic Clusters of Opportunity. Basically, that provides assistance directly to farmers. Technical assistance through our agronomist in the field, financial assistance, and that helps to de-risk farmers as they adopt 4 of our kind of leading crops, Kernza, winter camelina, winter barley, and winter rye. So Colin oversees that work. He participated in the Clean Transportation Standard Working Group, which was a pretty large investment of time. There's a lot of interest in our oilseed crops, winter camelina and pennycress. He was there to provide data and context on where they are as potential biofuel feedstocks. And he's also been working with the Kernza market, growers, the co-op, other partners who are sourcing Kernza to help them navigate bumps in the road as that new crop is getting established in the marketplace and getting set to grow. Then there's myself. I'm actually the newest member of this team of folks, and I'm basically provide all kinds of different program management. I support our crop teams, oversee our grant program, budgeting, strategic planning, communications, partnerships. We do all of this as a team among the 4 Forever Green directors, but I try to keep on top of a lot of those things. In the last few months, I helped secure a major grant from Cargill. That's $2.5 million over 5 years that goes directly into advancing our winter oilseed crops, winter camelina and pennycress. I think is a great testimony to the fact that the market sees what we're doing and is very interested in it. Big companies are coming on board to say, this is the direction we're heading to, and we want to support you. So big success from the last few months. Also helped manage our grant program and get those grants out the door. We had more applicants than ever, 52 applicants. We got 25 grants funded. Launched a strategic planning process with professional consultants to make sure that we're making the smartest decisions over the next 3 to 5 years. And also led a symposium on nitrogen management, so back to some of the issues discussed around water quality. Again, in our winter oil seeds, understanding they're already great. The science is showing for managing things like nitrate losses. How can we do even better? So that's the work I've been focused on. I just want to end by saying that the support through AGREET is really critical for us. So those breeders are essential. You have to have high-quality crops that perform well, or farmers won't grow them. We have to be able to retain those scientists. Those are world-class scientists. They have other opportunities. If their funding is not secure or doesn't look promising, they can go elsewhere. And our program is growing rapidly. A lot more of our crops are reaching commercial readiness, so we need to have the management capacity to keep up. The last thing I'll say is that this stable long-term funding is part of our plan to have leadership stability. We have a leadership transition on the way. Both Drs. Don Wise and Nick Jordan, our co-founders and co-directors, are seeing retirement on the horizon, reluctant as they may be to acknowledge that. They know it's coming, and they're being forward-thinking and making sure that we have a team in place to keep the work going. This stable funding is really critical for that. With that, thank you. I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Dr. Mitch and Dean Bryan, for your work on this. I know that agreed we've made some new investments, so thank you for both your willingness and collaboration to collaborate and execute these funds. Members, fortunately, we are at time, so if you have questions, I would encourage you to directly reach out to Dean Brian and Dr. Mitch. And our next meeting is Tuesday, February 20th, 2024, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.